use them. Anyway, okay, good. That's right. We could all use those, right? Anyway, today is January 15th, 2014. I'm Rick Hansen. And I want to continue in this track I've been on about the neuropsychology of the Four Noble Truths. And if you were here last week or you heard the talk, you know that last week I spoke about fear. Fear is a fundamental player in the second noble truth, the cause of our suffering, that being craving. So we have inside us, for very good reasons, very ancient tendencies to scan continually for threats, react, focus on threats when we see them or hear them or sense them in ourselves. We also have ancient tendencies to overreact to anything that's threatening and then immediately store that in memory. Once burned, twice shy. Okay? So we explored some of that and how to be freer in relationship to fear. And today I'd like to talk with you about a practice that I do that's been very helpful to me, and that is to really see what it's like to drop needless fear of other people. These days we tend to not be so afraid of saber-toothed tigers or even terrible natural hazards, with obviously many unfortunate exceptions, but we remain often needlessly fearful of other people or with regard to other people. So it's a very interesting and powerful practice to see what it's like to be with others, both intimates and people we know well, such as at work, as well as strangers in a street or people in a large group like this sitting nearby, to be with others with no sense of fear whatsoever. It's actually not that easy. So I want to put this practice in context by repeating, and for most of you, perhaps it'll be new for a few, the Buddha's teaching on the first and the second dart. He pointed out that very often there will be challenges to life. There will even be inescapable physical or emotional discomfort, ranging from subtle to intense. That's the first dart of life. That's the inevitable first dart of life, epitomized, if you will, in old age, disease, and death. Additionally, we engage a lot of self-inflicted wounding, where we throw second, third, fourth, and fifth darts ourselves in our reactions to challenges, our reactions to what's unpleasant or pleasant, and our reactions to first darts themselves. So to be crystal clear here, I think there's a place for recognizing when others are truly threatening, or when we can't count on them. It would be foolish to go in the world. For example, I've done a lot of rock climbing, and in rock climbing, typically, you have someone who's belaying you, commonly as you go up a mountain, and having been in the position of needing to know that my belayer will actually catch me and hold the rope tight if I fall, or place anchors correctly so that my partner and I are not both ripped off the mountain in case of a fall, it would be foolish, it would be unwise, it would be unkind to oneself and probably to others by ripple effects to trust people who are not fundamentally trustworthy. Also, it's clear that there are people sometimes who are actually out to get you. You know, you can get a sense that they're just going to relentlessly keep coming after you for some reason. Or you can realize that in certain larger situations, you know, other groups are opposed to your own personal interests or political policies or values. You can also see in certain situations that other people, for some reason, have taken offense at things that they don't really need to take offense at, or have exaggerated reactions to really small things. So I'm not saying one word here about being deluded in a certain sense of that word, or ignorant about other people, or being foolishly naive about investing in others or trusting in others, when really there's no cheese down that tunnel. You know, that's a dry well. Okay, to be crystal clear. On the other hand, I don't know about you, but I've observed in myself a lot of second dart reactivity that's fearful, that's unnecessary, that's out of proportion to what's happened, or in fact is really based on, to use a psychological term, a transference into the present or a transference to people in present life from previous life, experiences, particularly from childhood. So for example, I grew up in a very, relatively benign environment, very ordinary, no wars were breaking out in West Covina when I was growing up and so forth. On the other hand, I had many experiences as a shy and very young, kind of dorky kid, of feeling like an outsider in groups. And then later in life, 30, 40 years later, for example, I'd be in settings where I knew the people included me, I knew everything was fine, and I would just watch this subtle construction going on in my mind that would somehow create like an us-them structure and somehow make it up that I was an outsider, and then overinterpret very ordinary omissions or not being noticed or not being called upon when I would raise my hand or people kind of shrugging when I would offer my brilliant insights or something like that. And I would take it personally. I would slot it into that old paradigm. There's a term in psychology, mostly from Rorschachs, how people respond to Rorschachs. Some people are over-incorporators. In other words, they have a paradigm, they have a model, and everything gets slotted into it, okay? Even if it doesn't really fit at all. So you could see some of the ways, at least for myself, that I would be afraid needlessly, which would create suffering in me and then frankly set me up to be overly contentious or a little prickly or counterattacking to kind of reestablish the proper balance of things and thus create needless conflict. So I want to invite you right now to just take a moment and make this a little more experiential. Bring it home. So to begin with, if you like, right now, kind of privately inside yourself, scan some of the key people in your world, like people you work with or live with, perhaps sleep with, or maybe types of people, authority figures, women, men, people who are not like you, different races, different ages, different orientations, different body types, what have you. And just kind of quietly for about half a minute now, explore how there might be anxiety of those people, fear of those people, or anxiety in reference to those people. For example, anxiety that they won't approve of you, or they will look down on you, or fundamentally, they won't give you what you want. They won't recognize you, they won't love you, they won't be faithful to you, they won't agree with you, they won't give you what you want. So I'll be quiet for half a minute or so. So then, let's do another little thing inside. Pick someone that, for you, or perhaps a group of people, has felt particularly threatening in your history. Maybe, for me, thinking about growing up, it would be sort of alpha males, big athletic, macho, burly, boys, young men in school. Or perhaps for you it might be someone in your current life. And if you can, pick someone who you tend to have an exaggerated fear of. Right? And then for starters, see what it's like to explore compassion for that other person or group of people. A sense of starting with empathy, some sense of or awareness of their discomfort, their suffering, their stress. You know, the knowing that they know they will die someday. Even the knowing that they know that their children will die someday. Finding your way into compassion for this person or group of people that has felt threatening to you. And seeing what happens inside when you do this. You can do this for people that you are afraid will let you down. See what happens to the fear when you have compassion for people that you're afraid will let you down. And then last, perhaps think about groups of people whose politics you don't like. And see if you can simultaneously be centered in a sense of not waiving your rights, of, you know, being a stand for whatever your principled views are, while at the same time having compassion for those other people, recognizing that they too suffer, they too are stressed, they too have pain. And kind of wrapping this part up, if you can, pull someone to mind that, you know, is significant in your life, or try this with different people, and we'll do kind of three statements, about 15, 20 seconds each, see what it's like for you. And you can even do it with this, if you want, with people nearby in this room. See what happens if you say to yourself inside, or as if you're saying it to that other person, I know you will not attack me. I know you won't attack me. See what happens inside yourself when you, if it's true, only if it's true, say that to yourself with reference to one or more other people. I know you won't attack me. See if you can use that as a way to find your way to a sense of peace with regard to that person, even a sense of fearlessness. I know you won't attack me. let's try this with a second statement. It could be that same person, it could be other people, it could be people in this room. The statement is, even if you did mistreat me, I'd still be okay in my core. Even if you did mistreat me, I'd still be okay in my core. If that's true, and it usually is true, and using that again as a way to find your way to peace, even a fearlessness with regard to that other person or people. And then the last one, just again as an experiment, with that person or perhaps a group of people or even people in this room, this time saying, if you let me down, I'd still be basically okay in my core. Again, using that as a way into peace and fearlessness and even freedom with regard to that other person. If you let me down, I'd still be okay in my core. Okay. A couple comments that I want to see what you experienced and what you think about all this. The point of this inquiry is to undo one of the major causes of that craving, that drivenness or that combativeness or defendedness that leads to suffering and harms. That's the point. And it's to come to the place from a saying of the Buddha that we are to be peaceable, friendly, and fearless. Isn't that an interesting last descriptor? Fearless, as his encouragement to us in our own practice, to be peaceable, to be friendly, and to be fearless. Now, last point, anxiety may still arise. There might be a habit of anxiety, or you might be temperamentally anxious. Anxiety might still arise. But what's our relationship to that anxiety? Do we need to take it seriously? Do we need to be governed by it and therefore unfree in our relationship to it? Or if we truly do recognize that you're not going to attack me, or if we truly recognize even if you did mistreat me, I'd still be fundamentally okay in my core. Or we recognize, if you did let me down, I'd still be fundamentally okay in my core. If that's true, then even if fear arises, we don't need to identify with it. We don't need to make it our own and fuel it and add to it and get all caught up in it. And the whole point of this is to imagine, what is it like to be with other people in such a way that we're giving them no cause to fear us, and we are not making up causes to fear them. You're feeling your way into what that's like. What's it like to walk down a street without any fear of others? You know, what's it like to be at home, interested, protecting your own interests, your own needs, you know, reserving your own rights and so forth? What's it like to do that at work or at home or while making love or hanging out or being in an argument even with someone without any unnecessary fear? That's the opportunity. That's the opening here. And I have found for myself that this practice is remarkably rich and available to us, you know, much of the time. So, I wonder what you felt playing around with those little practices and what comments or questions you might have about this as you help yourself become free of needless fear. Yeah, please. Metta being loving kindness for other people.
Yeah, the love that I do, the prayers instead of doing traditional Vipassana.
Yeah.
And it's helped me so much with that kind of fear because it's a way to understand, like just what you said, like there's a core that I relate to with them. Even if I'm afraid of them, if I just relate to the core, then the fear is kind of something superfluous that is just there, kind of nebulous, and a way to cut to the real essence of who they are instead of being wrapped up in that anxiety. And it's just perfect what you said, because it's so true that you don't have to get identified with it.
Yeah.
And this is even another tool to just let go of it completely, but I thought it was great.
Yeah, thank you for saying that. Just to kind of recap it and also for the recording, you know, that having compassion for the suffering of others, and especially having kindness for them, besides being benevolent and all the rest of that, is a great way to feel less fearful ourselves. One of the things I started doing a while ago when I would give talks and stuff, you know, to a lot of people, is I would take a moment before it was my time to speak to just look at people's faces and without some kind of, you know, presumptuous mind reading, just see the suffering in other people or the stress or the longing. I could relate to it myself. And it was very funny. Any kind of stage fright I had would just, you know, fade away, honestly, by recognizing the fear or suffering of other people.
And I think the important part of what you said is a lot of it is created, like, just 99% of the time they weren't gonna.
Yeah.
It's not, usually for me, not rational. It's not rational. I just have to admit it's not rational. And there it just makes it so much easier to get past that.
Great, yeah. That's right, thank you. That's great. Got it. Great.
I have to say, I've struggled with this tonight.
Yeah.
So my fear, lately I've heard a miracle is shifting from fear to love. That's what I want to do. However, just tonight, I was very sick a couple weeks ago. And so my fear is being around people who are sick.
Yeah, like me, probably.
Not you, but I actually think, I never thought of the word attacked, but
yeah.
Somebody here was not sounding good to me. And I had such a rough meditation, I'm thinking, what is it? Stay home with you, sir.
Yeah, yeah.
Also, like, I didn't get on a plane because I was so sick, and it cost me a lot of money, and so I had that kind of fear. I was sick a couple years ago, and then I missed a couple weekends, and I was in bed for 4 days. And so I had this come up from tonight, and I was so, my meditation was just, but I never thought of myself as attacking, but maybe I did, because somebody in my vicinity did not sound well. And so I asked the person if they were, are you okay? And, you know, this person said they're just getting over a cold, and I said, well, you sound really sick. Maybe I attacked. And so then on the other hand, I was at your workshop last weekend, and I had a little coffee. And so I got up and left, and I was coughing profusely. You were talking about compassion and everything. Not one person asked me if I was okay.
Yeah.
So I realized the lesson was to be compassionate to myself.
Yeah.
And then I thought, I left. I didn't want to disrupt. I mean, I was there for most of the day. So anyway, so I have this whole thing going on. I just don't want to get sick. That's my fear.
Yeah.
So I apologize if I was, it was just throughout the meditation, I was sitting there thinking, you know, I don't understand why people, but I guess there's germs everywhere.
Yeah. Well, thank you for saying all that, and I won't try to summarize it for the recording, but I'll just say for the moment that, you know, who among us has not been captured by something, you know, whatever it might be? And, you know, and I think we can appreciate other people, you know, different people have their thing, right? And who among us has not been captured by something ourselves, by our own thing, the first point. And then the second thing is that obviously it's appropriate, like I said in the very beginning, to protect yourself against other people. And I find I know I'm in situations, you know, I can think about times when I've approached an elevator and someone in that elevator is coughing away and I'm like, okay, y'all can just keep going. I'll get the next one. You know, we protect ourselves as best we can, right? And also appreciate that we have impacts on other people. You know, that's certainly true too. What I'm really exploring here with you is what is it like to see real, if you will, impacts on us from other people without adding unnecessary anxiety to it, you know? And that part of that, of course, is to take care of ourselves. But a lot of it, I think, as the Buddha said, is to be peaceable, friendly, and fearless. You know, we might, how can I put it? Just, it doesn't mean we're fearful because we take care of ourselves, right? Or ask someone to cover their mouth. I'm, you know, at the tail end of a cold right now because our son rolled home, and you know, one of the things he did, you know, he was in this dance convention with young people exchanging germs right and left in various ways, as well as occasionally bodily fluids. And anyway, he rolls home and he's coughing all over the place. And my wife, his mom, is really quite nervous about germs more than I am. I just fairly fatalistic about it, but anyway, and you know, so well, we can ask other people to be kind of cool about it. But the question is, kind of more generally, you know, how do you experience this fear as you interact with other people, and what are the ways to relax and release that unnecessary burden, you know, on yourself? Also, because when we're fearful, we tend to do things that make other people scared too. Right? Yeah.
One thing that was occurring to me as I was trying to do the exercises, sometimes the fear or anxiety is triggered by unrealistic expectations that I have about how people are going to relate to me.
Yeah.
Because if I expect to be welcomed by everybody or liked by everybody and all these things, it's an unrealistic expectation, and I'm setting myself up to push those people away, be fearful of them, that they're going to not do what I expect. And I found that if I investigate my expectations a little bit, then it helps in this process.
Right.
Of being fearless, because on the other hand, you can take it to extremes and then you don't relate to people at all because you don't want to expect anything from them. Yeah. So I think there's a balance in that process.
Yeah, thanks for saying that. You know, that we can become more aware of our expectations and then less likely to get disappointed. Remember the old line, if you don't want to get disappointed, don't get appointed in the first place, you know, to things being a certain way, right? Great. Okay, over there. Comments, questions? Yeah.
Great topic. I think what came up for me, actually, after listening to some wonderful shares, which I relate, is the bigger fear, I think, is not of others. It's it's toward myself, myself betraying myself, the fear of self-betrayal. Mm. Craving, that I, an unmet need, I will still choose to, say, interact when I wouldn't ordinarily. And so I realize that it's repeatedly my own fear of my, you know, because it's, I actually feel this before I go forward, and I still go forward anyway. And how to catch when I feel that, the fear of, oh boy, am I going to allow myself to get into this? And then I try not to, and I do everything I can not to, and then I end up like with a relationship that might not be healthy or whatever for me. I slip into it out of compassion, because I feel the compassion for the other person, and then there I go again, get into a drama of some sort, and suffer tremendous suffering for myself.
Yeah.
I know better.
Thank you. I mean, to me, my takeaway from what you're saying is, one of the important things that helps us be fearless with regard to other people is to be assertive about our own needs. And, be, you know, paradoxically, knowing that you have the capacity to set good boundaries can enable you to be with other people in a more fearless way. Because you're not, you know in your heart that you're prepared to say no. You know in your heart that you're really prepared to tolerate their discomfort at not getting what they want from you, right? That's very interesting. Can you tolerate the distress of other people when they're not able to get you to do what they want, right? And if we can become more able to tolerate that discomfort that we might have about their discomfort, or even just tolerate their discomfort, we, in effect, can become freer with them and less fearful. And I really encourage you to really see what it's like, just even right now, what's the experience of not being at all afraid of the person sitting on either side of you? Make it real right now, or someone in front of you or someone behind you. Can you actually experience, literally, no fear whatsoever that the person on either side of you will jump in onto you and attack you? Seriously. When you say it like that, you suddenly realize, whoa, I've had this funny little vigilance about you, you know, or this funny little guarding or bracing. What's that actually like, to just feel no fear? You won't be hurt, you won't be jumped, you won't be hit, you won't be attacked. It's surprisingly hard sometimes. And yet when you start to explore it, it's pretty neat. Or what's it like to just look someone in the eyes, even around this room? And in the moment of that contact, you know, find your place to not having any fear of them. Take a moment to do this. It gets real when it's experiential. Just kind of look around. Feel it's like to just kind of look and realize, I don't need to be afraid of you. You might even say that to yourself. I don't need to be afraid of you inside your own mind. Or if you're really brave, you can look them in the eye. I don't really need to be afraid of you. Yeah. It's really easy to just kind of take this for granted and go, oh, la-di-da, I'm not afraid. Oh, yeah? You know, really? So anyway, yeah. Okay, a few more people. How about first there, then David? Yeah.
One of the people that I had some fear going on with, I could feel trust with, and I was able to process it pretty easily. But there was someone else that I could feel compassion for, but I didn't trust, and I couldn't process.
That's interesting. Could you, so the question being, what happens with people we don't trust, right? And so the interesting question can be, can I relate to somebody that I don't trust because they're not reliable? Or they're only reliable, you know, this big, and that's how big the relationship needs to be. Can I be with someone I actually don't trust while simultaneously not being afraid around them?
So yeah. Reliable as in trusting them not to attack you.
Say that again?
Reliable as in trusting them not to attack you.
Correct.
That was the feeling.
Oh, I see, okay. But what happens when you're with people who, especially not so much about attack, except they're just not going to, they're going to let you down, right? If you invest in them, they'll let you down. They won't return the lawnmower. They won't pay you back, you know, whatever it might be, you know, they'll. And it's interesting to find a way to see clearly what the other person is while at the same time, you know, resting in that kind of fearless place. That's really interesting, isn't it? And part of what makes it work is we, of course, have to protect our own interests. You know, the Buddha was no fool. He protected his own interests and stood up for them, certainly. But I think we could be with people and see them for what they are, while at the same time, not we might be wary of them, right? We might be vigilant or clear-eyed about them. Trust but verify, right, as Ronald Reagan put it. But we don't need to experience fearfulness. Yeah, a couple more people. Yeah, David.
I had two events that could have been interpreted as attacks today.
Yeah.
And I noticed that my suffering was related to my expectation.
Ah.
And in one case, it was regulator bank database guys. And I had no...
Are these human beings? I don't know.
I had no expectation of heart. I had no expectation of heart
right.
from them.
Yeah.
And so I actually didn't feel attacked in the moment.
Because you had no expectations that could be disappointed. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, wow, that was kind of interesting because I wasn't expecting something different.
Yeah.
And I was able to stay in full service, trying to understand, trying to give them what they needed. And then I had another client today that was more a heart organization, more of a service organization, more of a training and, you know, opening kind of organization. And I was told by them, I was commanded by them to do something, to command others to do something, as opposed to enrolling and getting a green. And it just hit me really wrong. It's like, we're going to get more accomplished if we get a green instead of commandment. And so I suffered over that far more than with the guys at the bank. And I was actually probably more seriously attacked at the bank.
Interesting. Yeah, got it.
So I find that expectation was very interesting.
That is very interesting. Well, just to kind of, if we could, just in the interest of time and also if it's okay, and so I won't keep spewing germs as well, you know, we'll wrap up soon. That's a good thing. It's good. I want to kind of move it to a wrap soon and relate to this. So what is it like inside yourself to imagine looking at other people in this room? You could do it with me if you want, or other people, or imagine doing it with people in your life, as if, you know, a kind of loving kindness phrase, a kind of compassion phrase is operating in your own mind. And you could play with different phrasings and so forth. But the essence of it essentially is looking at another person or bringing another person to mind and really saying to yourself, if it's true for you, helping yourself find your way into the truth of this, I don't need to be afraid around you. I don't actually need to be afraid around you. And use that as a doorway into that fearlessness which the Buddha talked about. That's a real practice. I really encourage you to explore that. And I find that to be a very marvelous and quick way to undo some of the causes of suffering. You know, I don't actually need to feel afraid around you. Maybe there's some people we do need to feel afraid around. There's some serious creepos that I really have thought to myself, I do need to feel afraid around you, okay? But most people, most minutes and most days, I don't actually need to feel afraid around you. I might need to be careful. I might need to be cautious. I might need to be assertive. I might need to be numbingly clear, all right? But I don't need to feel afraid around you. And that's a kind of gift to ourselves and to other people. So maybe we could meditate on that for one last minute here, and then we'll wrap up. I'm going to be sitting here thinking to myself, I don't actually need to feel afraid around you. And noticing what happens to the heart as we relax unnecessary fear. peaceable, friendly, and fearless. Be at peace. Thank you. See you next week. I'll be here next week, definitely. Thank you.
The day long last weekend.